Glad to see each and every one of you out this afternoon. I pray that the Lord would be with us for just a short period of time as I stand before you. Brother Marty called out a song there as we got ready for entering into this part of service. And it's a song I've heard several times before, but the words kind of touched me tonight in a different way than they ever have before. And I'm going to read part of that there. It said, "How deep the Father's love for us, how vast beyond all measure, that he should give his only son to make a wretch his treasure." I want you to think about that for just a split second this afternoon. If you had something that was beautiful and perfect and new, would you destroy it to get something that was beat all to pieces? Would you destroy the perfect thing that you had just to get back something that was already so broken? That's what God did when he sent Jesus into the world. That's what he did. Was he took that perfect child that he had, the absolute image of perfection, who'd never committed a sin, and he sacrificed it so that he may have all them broken people over there that he loves so much. He said, "Behold the man upon the cross, my sin upon his shoulders. Ashamed I hear the mocking voice call out among the scoffers. It was my sin that held him there until it was accomplished." But that last verse is the one that got me this afternoon. I think I saw it in a different way than I've ever saw it before. It said, "I will not boast in anything, no gifts, no power, no wisdom, but I will boast in Jesus Christ, his death and resurrection." Boy, if we could get to the point in life to where we could just fulfill that last verse, do you realize how perfect we would be living? If we could get to a point where we would not boast in anything, no gifts, no power, no wisdom, how many times is it out here in the world that we're doing a really good job, or we think we're doing a really good job, or somebody gives us some praise for something that we're doing, and we're like, "Yeah, you know, I'm doing pretty right. I pat myself on the shoulder, you know." If we could get to the point where we realize that none of that is from us, and give all the glory and honor to God, his death and resurrection and everything that we do, just imagine the place we would be in this life. Amen. I know some really, really talented people out there in this world. And I praise them myself with their talents, the things that they're able to accomplish in life, the walk that they live. I know lots of people that way, and I give them praise for it. And I know people do me the same at certain times in life, and some of the things that I do, but I hope that we would never let any of that go to our heads, and we would give the glory and honor back to where it belongs, not let it go to our heads and pat ourselves on the back and say, "You know, I am doing pretty good." There was a man one time, my thought process this afternoon, that was doing pretty good, was doing really good. A man named Job. Turn over to the book of Job. In the first chapter, starting in the sixth verse, said, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that he is like none other, there is none like him in the earth? A perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. Satan said, Have you considered my servant Job? Says he's a perfect, upright man, who gives God the glory and honor in everything that he does. He doesn't pat himself on the back. He doesn't take any that to his own head, but he gives God all the glory and honor. Have you considered him? And Satan said, Of course he gives you glory and honor. Look at all you've given him. He said, You've built a hedge about him. His health is perfect. He's got a beautiful family. Look at all the cattle he's got. Look at all the land he's got. Everything a man could want, Job has. Of course he gives you glory and honor. Anybody would give you glory and honor if you give them all that. That was Satan's reasoning behind it. Said, But put forth thy hand now and touch that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself not put forth thy hand. So Satan went forth in the presence of the Lord. God said, I'm going to prove to you that it's not all that I've given Job, all that I've blessed Job with, that makes him a man of God. I'm going to prove to you that Job is truly a man of God. If you think it's all those things that I've given him, you think it's all the things that he has, then go ahead, do what you will with it. Take it all away from him. I don't care. Because I'm going to prove to you that Job is truly a man of God. So Satan went away and said, There was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, The oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabians fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and only I alone escaped to tell thee. Job was sitting there. All of a sudden, a servant ran up and said, We got attacked, he said. He said, Every single one of the oxen that were plowing in the field and all the asses were out there pulling the grain carts or whatever they were doing. He said, They took them all away and they slain every single one of your servants. Everybody that was out there with them asses and them oxen are all gone and all the asses and oxen have been taken away. He said, I'm the only one that got away just to come and give that message to you and tell you. And said, while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, The fire of God is fallen from heaven and hath burned up thy sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone escaped alone to tell thee. You imagine sitting there and all of a sudden one of your servants running up and telling you, We've been attacked. All of the asses and oxen have been taken. All the servants have been slain that were over there on that hillside. And as soon as he gets speaking, before he even gets done speaking, here comes another guy running up and says, Listen, the fire from heaven came down and slew every single one of our sheep and every single one of the servants out there, all the shepherds in the field that were with them. Be a lot to take in, I would imagine. Said, while he was yet speaking, there came another and said, The Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone am escaped to tell thee. Before the second guy got done talking, a third guy ran up and he said, They took all the camels and slain all the servants. You've lost every single camel that you have and all the servants that were out there with them. And said, while he was yet speaking, There came also another and said, Thy sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in the eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young man, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone, tell thee. Put yourself in Job's position for just a split moment. Soon as you get news that all your asses and oxen and those servants that you loved out there were all slain, took away. Before you even had a moment to comprehend that, you were told that all your sheep and all those servants had been killed. And before you even have a chance to comprehend it, you get told that all the camels and all those servants had been taken away and slain. You know, that'd be enough to break any man down right there. But all those possessional things there, on top of all that, there came another one and told him, said, You've lost all of your sons and daughters, daughter-in-laws. They're all gone. They were all over in the house together, and the house fell down, and it killed every single one of them. You know, there's people sitting around that have lost loved ones in here, some recently. They say a child... Losing a child is the hardest thing that there is. And no parent should ever have to bury their own child. And I think we can all agree with that. But to lose all of that all at once, and then to lose every single one of your children in an accident all at the same time, I can't imagine any man that could ever stand through that. Said, Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshiped. How many of you do you think your first instinct when getting such terrible news, when getting such horrible things told to you, that everything that you had and everything that you loved had been taken away, your first thing to do would be to praise God. Most of us, our human nature would get a hold of us and we would probably curse God right off the bat. We'd probably ask for forgiveness that in a day or two later when we came to our senses, I'm sure. But it would be easy to curse God in that circumstance. Even if you just got down to the point you said, "Why me, God? Why is this all happening to me?" Do you understand that that's cursing God? Not trusting His plan and His design and questioning His plan and His design? I've asked people in times past, standing in the pulpit, that how many people thought they were smarter than God with a show of hands. Then I've raised my hand up. Everybody kind of looks at me like I'm insane. And I said, "Well, before you run me out of the stand, let me explain. I don't believe that I'm smarter than God. I know better. But I'm the only one that answered that statement truthfully. Because each and every single one of us live a life from day to day in a way that we think we know better than God. So we do think that we're smarter than God. We just don't want to admit it to ourselves, and we'll never admit it out loud to other people. But your life that you live on a daily basis, how often is it that you're living a way that you are trying to prove that you're smarter than God? How many times are you living a life that you know the right from the wrong, you know the path that you're supposed to be going down, and you've told, "Well, I'm going to try it a different way. I'm going to go my own direction. I'm going to do my own thing, and I think it'll work out." That's living a life trying to say that you're smarter than God. We have it all laid out in front of us right here of how to walk, how to live, how to treat one another. And we walk contrary towards it constantly. We walk a direction like we're following a GPS. I've compared this book to a modern GPS, or an ancient GPS, I guess you would say, many times before. We live in a day and time where we follow a GPS with everything that we do. Most of us, we go somewhere and we travel and we just follow that thing blindly. And people ask us when we get somewhere, "Well, how did you get here?" "Well, I don't know. I followed the thing. I don't even know what roads I took. If I had to get back from where I came from, I'd have to turn back on the GPS because I wasn't paying no attention." But you know, you can argue with a GPS in your car. It can tell you to turn right up ahead and you can say, "No, I don't want to." And you can pass it up. And it might tell you to make a U-turn a time or two. But once you go far enough along, it'll find a different route, the direction that you're going. It'll tell you, "Okay, I see you're not going to make a U-turn. I see you're not going to go back the way that I told you to go. So go on up here and make a right, and we'll connect back over in a minute. Get back over there." We treat the Word of God as a modern-day GPS. We treat it as we think we can argue with it and say, "I don't want to go that route. I'm going to keep going my way, and eventually we're going to connect back path." Let me tell you, God's way will never connect back up with you and give you an alternate path. It's always going to tell you to make a U-turn and go back the way I told you to start with. God's way is set in stone. It's not to be argued with. If you think Noah over there building that big boat, he spent 100 years of his life nearly building a boat. If he'd have argued with God and said, "Well, I don't think that timber's going to hold that up properly. Let's do it a different way." Do you think that boat would have worked out the same way? You see, he had to follow God's path in order for that to work out the way that it did. And miraculously, believe it or not, which you should believe it because you're sitting in this church house this afternoon, but you know that it was centuries later before they ever built a boat that size again. And when man decided they were going to do it man's way, you know what we decided to do? We decided to experiment because that's what men do. We tried to figure out the best way to build a boat. Big, long, skinny, shallow draft boat, big, wide, deep draft boats and all these different things. And you know what? After trial and error and trial and error and trial and error, you know what man finally found out? That first one that was ever built back there centuries ago, that ark was the perfect dimensions for rough sea weather. that it had the perfect width and length and draft to make it as sturdy as possible in rough seas? Do you think that was by accident? I don't think a man named Noah, who we have no recollection in the book, had ever built a boat before. I don't know. He may have been a shipbuilder up to that point. I have no clue. It doesn't tell us anything about prior to his life that he'd ever built one. I like to think it was his first one he'd ever built, and probably was. But we don't know that for certain. But I know for certain that no one had ever built one of that size and that magnitude before. And to get it right on the very first try took following the GPS correctly, not trying to do it his own way and arguing. I'm thankful this afternoon that Job was the man that he was, and he followed the GPS exactly, and not the cruel intentions of most man's heart would be in this situation. It said he fell down to the ground and worshipped, and said, "Naked I came out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Imagine getting everything that you had taken away from you, and being in such a state of mind where you understood that it was never yours to begin with. To be in a state of mind where you understood, you know what? God gave it to me and he had the right to take it away. And I'm thankful for the time that he gave me here on earth with it. If we'd all get to a point in life where we understand when things go wrong, it was never ours to begin with. We should have been thankful for the amount of time that we had with it here on earth, and we were allowed to be blessed in it in that short period of time instead of cursing the time that it was taken away from us. Jonah was sent over there to preach to a city, Nineveh. And then he went and sat up on a hillside and waited for the destruction of God to come down on that city. And he was mad when the destruction of God didn't come down that city because they turned their ways back to God. God lifted up a gourd overnight to give him some shelter, some shade out there in that sun. And for a day he sat out there under that great big gourd, and he had shelter and he had shade. And over the next night there was a worm that came and took it all away. And he cursed God. He cursed the fact that the gourd was gone. And God said, "Look at you. Look at you. Sitting here mad that something that you didn't plant, you had no effort in whatsoever, didn't appreciate for the time that you had, instead of thanking me like Job did over here for the amount of time that you had it, you cursed the fact that it was gone away. And yet you want me to destroy that city over there that has my people in it, whom I put forth time and effort and love into. And you don't think I should forgive them, but you're going to sit here and whine about the gourd." How often do we sit around and whine about the gourd in our life? How often do we sit around and complain about something that was never ours to begin with, instead of being thankful for the amount of time that we had with it? Said, "In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Again, now back up for just a second. Read exactly what that said one more time. It said, "In all this, Job sinned not." Not that he gave God all the glory and honor and he never cursed God, but he didn't even sin. We can't even go a day in time in our life without doing it, without horrible circumstances coming down upon us. And Job, in the worst day of his life, didn't even sin. Said again, "There was a day when the sons of God came and to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, 'From whence comest thou?' And Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it.' And the Lord said unto Satan, 'Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. He said, okay. You won the first round. He said, I really thought he was going to buckle a lot easier. He said, you know, we did. We took everything away from him. He said, I really thought that would do it, but let me just clarify this real quick. He said, we didn't touch him. He said, everybody has a breaking point. Everybody, when they're facing death themselves, when they're in a world of hurt themselves, and it's upon them, not the them they love, not the things that they have, but when it's truly beckoning upon them, every man has a breaking point. You want me to prove it to you? Let's curse Job himself, his body. He'll curse you then, God, for sure. For sure then he'll curse you. Said the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So what Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. And he took him a potsherd and scraped himself withal. And he sat down among the ashes. Then said unto his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thy integrity? Curse God and die. I want you to imagine exactly what Job went through here. Most of us sitting in here has probably had a sore of some point in our life. Several of us have had some kind of boil before. There's just an infection and a blistering that just hurts like all get out. Satan cursed Job with boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. There wasn't a square inch on his body that was not covered in pain and agony. Just imagine that for a split second. From the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. He couldn't stand up without being in pain, being on top of those boils. He couldn't sit down without being in pain and being on top of those boils. He couldn't lay down on his side, on his back. He couldn't prop up against a wall. He couldn't lean. He couldn't put his hands on things to put any pressure on to pull himself up without causing irritation and pain. There wasn't a single place he could turn for comfort. We've all had pain and agonies in our life. And you know, usually there's a position we can get in that will help it somewhat. There's positions we can get in that will make it worse also. But you know, it's all awful nice to have a position that you can get in that you can still get a little bit of rest and relaxation. May not go away, but you know, it doesn't make it worse. Imagine being in a place where every single thing you did made it worse. You couldn't stand, you couldn't sit, you couldn't lay down. That's the position that Job was in here. I can't imagine being in a worse position. I picture people that have been lit on fire and covered up from their head to toe in burns. Most of those probably still had some spot on them where they could still put their hand down and raise herself up or put some pressure on or sole their feet or something. Most always, there's still something that wasn't affected in that. But Job was covered from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head and everywhere in between. There was absolutely nowhere he could put any pressure without causing himself more pain. And his wife saw this and saw the agony that he must have been in and saw the pain that he must have been in. And said, no man needs to live like this. Just curse God and die. Just be dead. You'd be so much better off if you would just curse God and die. I can't stand seeing you like this. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What shall we receive good at the hand of God, and we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? Not a single time In all that pain and all that agony, not a single time did he question God and say, "Why me, God? Just take it away from me, God. Just do whatever you need to do." Just not a single time did he ever lose his faith in God. And yet we live out here in this world, this day and time, when any little bitty thing comes up against us and we want to turn and go, "Why me, God? Why can't you help me out? Why can't you answer my prayers?" Not realizing the things that we've been given and we're taking for granted. Said, "Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamite. For they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off, and they knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept." I want you to imagine that for just a second. We know the position that Job must have been in, covered from head to toe in boils and immense agony and pain. But I want you to realize the way that it must have affected him. The sores and the boils, and the way it actually affected the way he looked. Three of his best friends, whom we can only imagine he knew for a very, very long time, came to see him and didn't even recognize him. You know what it reminds me of? One that hung on a cross one time. There was a woman stood there that didn't even recognize him. One that had known him his whole life and loved him with her whole heart. And he was in such pitiful shape that she didn't even recognize him. That's the position that Job was in here. He was in such a horrible position that those that had known him his whole life, or at least a good portion of it, didn't even recognize him. He was in such bad shape. Said, "And so they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw his grief was very great. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day. And Job spake and said, Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night which it was, there was a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let the cloud dwell upon it. Let blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it, and let not be joined unto the days of the year. Let not come into the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let not joyful voice come from therein. Let them curse it, that thou curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars, the twilight thereof, be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see dawning of the day, because if it shut not the doors upon my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes, why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly?" Job got to a point where he said, "You know, I wish I'd have never been born." He didn't say, "I wish this had never happened to me." I want you to think about that. If we all was in Job's position, had everything that a man could ever want, all the cattle and all the sheep and oxen and the ass and the servants and a beautiful big family, got to spend all that time with them, and it was all taken away, you know, we'd all go to the point, "Well, I wish that day hadn't never happened. I wish that day hadn't never happened where all that got taken away from me." But Job didn't wish for that. He said it'd been better that I'd never been born. Never once did he take away what God had given him. Never once did he take away any thanks for the things that he had. He said, "I wish none of it had ever happened to begin with." He didn't go back to cursing the things that had taken place. in all of his agony and pain and sorrow, never once did he lose faith. He just wanted to be back with God. Imagine that for just a split second. We all have been in a position in our lives where we wish probably that we were just done with this life and wish we were just with God right now. Whether that's a thought process of, look at this world out here. I just wish everything would just come to an end and we could all just be sitting in the feet of God right now and praising Him for eternity. That's not a horrible thought process to have. To want to be with your Lord and Savior, that's a beautiful thing to wish for. But never once did Job ever curse God in any of that. He cursed himself. He cursed his life of what he had lived. He cursed the things that he had done. How often is it in this world out here that we curse God or someone else for things that we have done ourselves instead of looking in the mirror and seeing where it truly came from? I know I've talked about at points in time, Brother Greg was talking about the harvest and the reaping and the sowing a minute ago, and about his tomato plants and other plants over there and taking care of them. Do you realize that we reap what we sow? Brother Kevin Kennedy told it beautifully here a while back. He said, you know, there's three laws to reaping and sowing. That you reap what you sow. You reap more than you sow. And what was the third one? I done forgot it. And you reap where you sow. It just left me all of a sudden. But you know, how often is it in life that we're cursing, that we're reaping things that were the ones that sowed? I've told people before, you know, sometimes you lay a seed in the ground and you think, well, it's okay. I'll have enough weed killer to kill it when it sprouts up. I'm going to go ahead and do this thing that I know I shouldn't be doing. That's planting a seed. How often is it that you hear a voice in your head say, I know I shouldn't be going down this route. I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I won't do it again. I'm just going to do it this one time. And I'll ask for forgiveness for it afterwards. And it'll be okay because I'll turn my life around afterwards. I'll start doing something different afterwards. And you think, well, it's okay because by the time that little seed that I planted, by the time it germinates, you know what? I'll be able to afford enough Roundup to kill it, you know. I'll be able to take care of it when it germinates. Only to lose track of how many of those seeds that you planted. And before you know it, sometimes those things lay dormant for years. Depending on the kind of plant it is, you know, sometimes you can plant a seed and it can lay dormant for years before it ever germinates. You know what that means? It means a lot of times with our human nature, we probably have the ability to forget that we ever planted it to begin with. So, just because you're planting a good garden today, just because you're planting the right things today and walking the right path today, you don't have the right to be mad that you're still having to deal with those seeds that you planted years ago. Just because you forgot that you planted them, if you're the one that planted them and they're overtaking your good garden today, you don't have a right to argue and be mad that they're growing out there in your garden. I've compared it to kudzu at a point in the past, you know. I don't know why in the world anybody would ever plant some kudzu, I don't know. But you know, it was brought into this country, thought that it would be a great thing for erosion control. And I guess it probably did work for that, but there was a lot of other consequences that came with it that was probably a little unexpected.
Yeah.
But you know, that's one of the hardest things there is to kill. It just keeps growing and growing at such a fast pace, and you can cut it back and you can cut it back and it'll keep coming back, keep coming back. Well, you know what? Sometimes we have to understand we don't have the right to complain about having to cut back that kudzu every few months, every few weeks, if we're the ones that planted the kudzu.
Just because that kudzu is going to drown out our good garden that we've got planted over here. Well, guess what? You shouldn't have never planted the seeds of kudzu to begin with. But if you're the one that planted the seeds of kudzu, you don't have a right to be complaining about the fact that you've got to deal with the seeds that you planted. That's what we do out here in this world quite often. We point blame here and there. This president, that president, this congressman, that congressman, this thing, this, never taking our part for what we've done in anything. Realizing that we had a part to play in every bit of our lives, our personal lives. How many times have you followed the GPS and argued with it? How many times have you ever followed this GPS and argued with it? And now you're sitting around complaining about the outcome of it. Maybe if you'd have followed the directions correct to begin with, you'd be in the correct place right now. You ever think about that? It's pretty hard to follow this GPS because we have a sin nature about us that likes to argue with the correct way to walk. It's been that way since the beginning of time. But how many times have you looked back and said, well, if I was back in that time, I wouldn't have done that. Yeah. I know each and every one of us has probably had the thought process at some point in time is, why did you have to eat that fruit over in the garden? That's the only thing you had. You had everything perfect. You had a perfect life. All you had to do was not eat that fruit. That's the only commandment that you had, and you couldn't follow it. Every single one of us has probably had that judgmental thought at some point in our life. For completely forgetting that's what we're left with today is one or two commandments. The lawyer was questioning Jesus and he said, what's the great commandment? He said, to follow thy Lord, thy God, with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is likened unto the first, to love thy neighbor as thyself. You're left with two commandments here on this earth, two instructions. And you can't follow them, yet you think you got the nerve to judge Adam and Eve over there for failing one. There was a point in time where a group of God's people was set aside and told everything, you'll have everything you ever need. Just don't go over there and mess with them people over there again. All you got to do is stay here with your people and you'll have everything that you ever need and you'll never want for nothing. Everything will be perfect, happy. You'll never be attacked again. You'll never have anything to worry about. Only thing you have to do is not go over there and mess with them people over there again. And we think, well, I could have done that. How would they? They had everything. Why would they have went and done that? That's the only thing they had to do was not go over there and mess with them people. That's the way we like to look at things and think about it. Well, if I'd have been in that position, we like to think about the Jesus Christ being here on earth saying, boy, I would love to have been there and to see the miracles that he performed and to see those things in Jesus Christ in person. How in the world could nobody, them people, not have believed? I would have believed if I'd have been there. I would have never let him hang him on the cross. I would have never been one of those people out in the crowd yelling for Barabbas instead of Jesus Christ to be freed. I would have never been out there lying to ourselves, because if we'd have been there, we'd have been same ones out there in the crowd crying out that they released Barabbas to us. It's easy to look back and judge things from a future standpoint, not understanding that right now we're standing in one of those standpoints that generations forward will be able to look back and go, well, look at them guys over there. They had everything they needed. All they had to do was just to love the Lord thy God with all the heart, with all the soul, and with all the mind, and to love thy neighbor as thyself. And they were a bunch of judgmental people that wanted to cast judgment on everybody and look for everybody's faults and failures all the time. You're in the exact same position today as every single one of those have been in the past. But you know, they say it's hindsight 20/20 for a reason, because it's easy to look back and see things that have already taken place. I'm sure that Gideon didn't have a clue what was going on when he was left with 300 men facing an army of over 100,000. I'm sure he had lots of questions in that moment. Looking back now, we can see that God needed 300 witnesses. He didn't need a single one of them people in order to win that battle, but he needed people who were faithful people, who were willing to march into battle and see the glory of God destroy that enemy over there. And he got 300 witnesses out of it who passed the story down for generations, and we read it today. You see, God has never needed man for a single thing.
That's right.
The only thing God has ever needed man for was to give him praise, honor, and glory. The thing that we fall short of all the time. God just wants us to be just as Job. Not rich and have all these things like Job do. I'm not prosperity preaching up here, but I'm telling you that no matter what position you're in, you should be thankful for it, and you should thank God for the things that you have, because they're all given of God. I spoke this morning on a little cartoon that I've seen in the past, and I love it because it's so beautiful and picturesque. There's a guy, one of those cartoons with the little bubble thought processes coming out of people's heads. And there's a guy sitting in a red light in this fancy sports car. And there's a little guy next to him in this little old sedan, little sport, Toyota Corolla or whatever it was. And he's looking over at that guy and he's thinking, boy, if I could just ever get to that position, I'd be happy. God, I'd love to have a car like that. There's a guy coming up in the bike lane over there on a little moped, looking at that guy in that little Toyota Corolla, going, if I could just ever get to a position where I could just have a roof over my head and a windshield in front of my face when I'm riding down these roads in these rainy conditions, boy, I'd be so happy. And there's a guy riding a bicycle up behind him, looking at the guy on the moped, going, if I could just ever have a moped like that, just a motor on my bike to help me pull these hills, you know. The guy walking down the sidewalk looking at the guy on the bicycle going, if I could just have two wheels under me, you know, I could coast down these hills and I wouldn't have to walk up and down every single one. Boy, what I would give to have a bicycle. And a guy sitting up on the balcony in a wheelchair looking down at the guy walking. Boy, if I had use of my legs, I could get out and walk. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Because it makes you understand, no matter what position you're in life, do you realize there's millions of people around the world that would give anything to have your life? When you think things are the lowest, when you think you're living your Job moment and everything in the world is coming down on you and everything in the world has been taken away from you and you don't see a way out, you don't see a way through, and you don't see how in the world anything's ever going to get any better. In your lowest point, there are millions of people around the world that would die to be in that position right there. And the quicker we realize that, the quicker we'll be able to give God the praise and honor and glory, even in the bad times. I hope this afternoon that I've said something that has been beneficial to you. I pray that if you've got anything out of it, that you'll give God the glory and honor. For that is our one great commandment. And that's why we're out here this afternoon, is to preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I pray that we all walk away from this place with a mindset and a place in our heart that we don't judge people out here in the world quite so harshly and quite so much. And we all don't take for granted the things that have been given to us. And we look at things from a standpoint of the things that have been given to me that I should be thankful for, instead of complaining about the things that have been taken away from us. Amen.